Hey, and welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. I've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten, and I got with me tonight Zach once again to be talking about all these games going on. Full preview tonight, every single Big Ten game, and we are also going to give you three teams we believe each. So Well, we might all be the same. Who knows? But we did not discuss our upset alert picks beforehand. So we will each give you three teams that we believe are on upset alert. Zach, how you doing today, man?
I'm a little tired. Had a long day practicing for a conference, but ready to talk some ball here tonight.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot of ball to talk about. So if you missed the Sunday episode, I told everybody we are getting rid of our Thursday night football show. That was kind of like our part two preview. Number one, it was not nearly viewed as much as the other ones. And so it was almost like, why am I doing a video, a live stream that nobody is watching when everybody else is just watching the first one? So we are just going to be doing the one. And then number two, there's only eight games now, almost every week. So before there was like 10, 11, 12, sometimes more than that. So it was almost impossible to get them all done in one episode. But now we feel like there is a better possibility of us to do that. So we are going to do our best to get that done. Zach, I got to ask you, man, how are you feeling about just this slate in general this week? Like, there's some good games, but there's also some games where it's like, oh, that spread is maybe a little bit higher than I thought it would be. What do you think of this week's slate?
I think there's a couple games clearly that are, they're going to be overmatched. I think Penn State, UCLA in particular, I'm like, that's going to be a rough day in Beaver Stadium. I got friends going to that game, so I think they're going to be happy because they're Penn State fans. But there are some spreads here where I'm like, think you know how this game is good. Similarly to Penn State Illinois, I could not believe that spread was 18 points last week. There's a few spreads where I'm like, Vegas, I don't think you understand these teams or where this game might head. So
I agree. There are some spreads, and we'll get to it because I think that there are some prime upset picks this week for people to be talking about and people to be thinking about. So I am all for the discussion here. Zach, let's just go ahead and get right into it. We got our very first game to get to. It is Purdue and Wisconsin. Now, this is not by any means the marquee game of the week. However, this is two teams that are struggling right now in the Big Ten, two coaches that many fan bases have questions about. I mean, look, Wisconsin, they're 2-2. They're 0-1 in the Big Ten. They host Purdue, who is 1-3 and 0-1 in the Big Ten. It's a key Big Ten matchup for each of these teams, not really for the Big Ten overall, and for each of these coaches. Both teams are coming off tough losses. Wisconsin fell to number 11 USC basically in the second half, 38-21, while Purdue lost 28-10 basically in the second half again. Purdue fired their offensive coordinator Graham Harrell after the Nebraska loss, and offensive analyst Jason Simmons now is handling the play calling duties. Wisconsin's redshirt sophomore QB Braden Locke is starting over the injured Tyler Van Dyke. Once again, he's out for the season. He had 180 passing yards and a TD with an interception versus USC. Purdue has struggled offensively, averaging just 12.7 points over the last three games, and Wisconsin has dominated these two teams' rivalry, if you'll call it, winning 17 straight games versus Purdue, with the Boilermakers' last win at Wisconsin in 2003. Zach, what stands out to you in this game, man?
Well, first off, Kyle Orton's the last Purdue quarterback that's won at Camp Randall. Wow.
Yeah.
That stands out.
He's the last quarterback that beat Wisconsin. It's 17 straight game win streak for Wisconsin.
And that's not just at Camp Randall, that's just total.
Yeah. Since 2003. Yep. You'll look it up on Winspedia.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense because up till a couple years ago, Wisconsin was pretty consistently in the top four or five of the conference. And so it makes sense. They've been steady. I think the thing that stands out to me is that both teams have a lot of questions, which I think you brought up at the beginning. And so this, I mean, I'll be honest, Wisconsin's a 14-point favorite. This is one of my teams on upset alert. And I feel like it's hard to say it's an upset alert because I think both teams have not been very good. And I don't mean to disrespect Badger fans or Boilermaker fans, but I legitimately don't have a good handle on this game because I think both teams have underperformed. I think Wisconsin looked a little better against USC in the first half, but the reality is once they got figured out, like they got figured out and it was over. Mm-hmm. And Purdue, like they put up a good fight against a lethargic Nebraska team in the first half, but once Nebraska figured them out, they were figured out. So I don't know if I see like a big key, because if Wisconsin had their power running game going, I'd be like, okay, I think Wisconsin has the edge, but they're so stuck in neutral right now with their air raid, or do we want to be, they certainly don't want to be power eye.
Right.
And you've got maybe the worst quarterback in the league in Braden Locke. And, you know, he is a backup for a reason.
Worst but overall quarterback or worst passing quarterback? Because I can think of a worst passing quarterback.
Yeah, I mean overall. Yankee, I see you. Yankee, I see you. Overall, not passing. I've seen Alex Orji throw, okay? We're
going to
just...
That's funny. On. Keep going.
I love you, Yankee.
I think this is really interesting because one of Purdue's biggest deficiencies has been stopping the run. And obviously they were not able to do that at all against Notre Dame. And it's just kind of compounded from there. They've not really been able to do much. And Wisconsin has struggled to run the ball. Last week, I felt like that was going to be the key, was for Wisconsin to just keep pounding the rock. And eventually they would be able to run the ball against USC. That did not happen. It was actually turnovers that got, you know, Wisconsin the lead, but still, they were not able to hold on to that lead and run the ball effectively, basically at all, against USC, especially in the second half. And so this is a game that, to me, is a get-right game for Purdue's defense. Like, if you want to show that you have a pulse, if you want to show that you are a team that, you know, is rallying behind your head coach and wants to keep him there and do all that stuff, like, this is the type of game where you have to come in and you have to stop the run. I'm not saying they need, like, 0 yards rushing or anything like that, but they need to keep Wisconsin under 100 yards rushing in this game, and they need to come out and they need to win the game. Hudson Card is getting a lot of credit from like PFF and stuff like that, and to me, he's going to need to prove that and come out in this game and actually play with the numbers and the stats that are being suggested to us. So I don't know if it'll happen, but at the end of the day, like, to me, Wisconsin needs to get their run game going and Purdue needs to stop the run game. So
yeah,
that's like the biggest thing in this matchup. And I think whoever makes that happen will be the one that comes out on top in this game.
Yeah. I think the coordinator firing, you know, Graham Harrell leaving, that could go one of two ways. It could kind of light a fire under the Boilermakers, to your point. But on the other hand, it just could add more confusion to a mess that I think is more and more pointing to Ryan Walters being the problem in that locker room. And it's hard for me to pick Purdue because of all the problems. And, you know, you mentioned Hudson Card, I think, has been okay when he's had time to throw. The problem is he's had no time to throw because that offensive line has been abysmal.
Right.
But again, Wisconsin's defensive line hasn't been great either. So it's like, yep. Okay, which position group has the edge? I think the meteor has the edge. Like, just blow it up. Just right. It's all bad. I don't know what to say, but that's why I think Wisconsin is on upset alert, just because I just don't know what you're going to get with either of these teams. Wisconsin has no business being a 14-point favorite to anybody right now.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I would pick Purdue. I mean, if I were betting on this one, I'd pick Purdue to cover in an instant. But honestly, I'm still not completely confident in it because I like the storyline of, like, oh, you know, their offensive coordinator just got fired and stuff. But, like, I don't know if it's effort. I think it's been coaching that has been what's bad for this Purdue offense. And you tell me they're going to bring an analyst in and he's going to be the play caller and he's going to be the one. Like, I don't know. Like, this just doesn't have a good recipe for Purdue in this one. And honestly, like, I think Wisconsin, Luke Fickell is a better coach to me. And so at the end of the day, like, I think Wisconsin comes out on top in this game. And but I don't know if it's by 14 points. I find that hard to believe just because Wisconsin doesn't exactly have the most explosive offense to be able to just pour it on Purdue either. So this is a really, really interesting game from the standpoint of who is going to suck less. It's not really an interesting game from, like, you know, very good football be played. But if you like watching games where both teams just are bad, this is your game.
This is the bad game of the week. It's I think there have been spots where Braden Locke has, like, thrown a few good balls. You know, I got to give him credit. He threw the deep pass. I forget the receiver he threw it to in the USC game. And I do think Will Pauling has a hand in a win for Wisconsin. And I think they get enough from the running backs. You know, Tywee Walker and Malusi and those boys, like, they can still play. And I like Wisconsin's roster a little bit more. And I they're at home. I think Fickle's better than Walters, even though I have my reservations over Fickle. I've got 24-17 Wisconsin.
Yeah, I have 31-20 Wisconsin in this one, even though I wish Ches Malusi would be what we saw from him last year. I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's the offensive line. I go back and forth on the two. It's really hard to distinguish, but at the end of the day, like, the trenches are not good for Wisconsin right now. And for a Luke Fickell team, like, he is going in the opposite direction of how you build up a team. I know that they are, you know, going more shotgun and, you know, spreading the ball out more and stuff like that. I think they're still running the ball a good amount. It's not completely air raid to that point where they're like 80% pass or anything, but it's still, you still need to see better running the ball, and not just like running the ball down the field, but like, what was it? 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1 last game where they came out in shotgun and ran the ball up the middle. It's like, what in the world are you doing, Phil Longo? Like, I know you want to run more shotgun. You want more, do more of that stuff, but like, you have to have a package for QB sneak. You have to have a package for, like, run, you know, just get a yard. And
It's a good reminder, as much as people were excited about Paul Christ being fired, be careful what you wish for when you fire a coach.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I feel like this could work. Like, what Luke Fickell is doing could possibly work if he had better trenches. But for whatever reason, he just doesn't have good trenches. And that's right now is the difference between a team like Wisconsin and a team like Michigan State to me. I know Michigan State just got blown out by Ohio State, but at the beginning of that game, Michigan State's offensive and defensive line were winning. They were winning against maybe not the defensive line as much, but the defensive line was at least holding steady with Ohio State's offensive line. Michigan State's offensive line was beating Ohio State's defensive line at the beginning of that game. Now, eventually they tired out because, you know, Ohio State has a platoon of 8-9 players they can throw in there, and just eventually wears you out. But still, like, anyway, that's my prediction, 31-20. I think that Purdue does see a little bit better stuff on offense, but I don't know if it's because of the coaching change. I think it's probably just more because Wisconsin defense is not great.
Not good. So, agreed.
All right, let's move on to UCLA and Penn State. Zach, UCLA and Penn State. Another game that I suppose could be interesting, but at the end of the day, Penn State should take care of business in this one. UCLA is 1-3, 0-2 in Big Ten play. They face a major challenge against number 7 Penn State, 4-0, 1-0 in the Big Ten on Saturday in State College. The Bruins' first-year head coach, Deshaun Foster, prepares for his team for Penn State's physical defensive style, showing them classic heavyweight boxing matches for motivation. Penn State's defense has been outstanding, allowing just 7 points in their last 2 games, including a dominant 21-7 win over number 19 Illinois, the Nittany Lions are ranked 7th nationally against the run, giving up just 72 yards per game, while UCLA's rush offense ranks near the bottom with just 57 yards per game. UCLA has struggled offensively, not scoring more than 17 points in any game this season, with penalties and a tough schedule contributing to their struggles. Both teams have penalty issues, with UCLA averaging 75 yards per game and Penn State averaging 66, a key concern for both coaches heading into their matchup. Penn State's offense is led by Nicholas Singleton, who is averaging 102 rushing yards per game and an impressive 7.7 yards per carry. Zach, what stands out to you in this game?
This is a bad matchup for UCLA.
Yes.
I mean,
this is not an upset alert game.
No. Here's the upset. If UCLA scores in double digits, that's the upset. Like, because it ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
UCLA, I mean, you said it. UCLA ranks in the bottom 57 yards per game rushing. Their offensive line is the weakness of the team. And I think Penn State's defensive line just showed everybody against Illinois that they are for real.
Yep.
Even if you are not as much of a believer, JR.
I never said they are not for real. I just don't know if they're in the conversation for like top three, top five defensive line in the nation.
That's fair. But I
by the way, UCLA second to last in rushing yards per game, 57 per game. Guess the one team that has it worse than UCLA.
Oh, is it a Big Ten team?
It is a MAC team that has faced multiple Big Ten schools this season. No, Kent State is one spot ahead of them. This is another MAC team.
Akron,
yes.
Okay.
Sorry, you can continue on with your thoughts. I thought,
if you have a worse rushing yards per game percentage than Kent State, you should be kicked out of the Big Ten. This is ridiculous.
I agree. I agree.
Anyway, sorry, Bruin Source. No hard feelings.
Trust me, I think at this point, like, I'm not even concerned. Like, the last game where I said both teams suck, like, I'm not even concerned about Purdue or Wisconsin or with UCLA fans getting mad at me. Like, they should be mad at their team. Don't get mad at me for saying what we've seen on the field. Sure. Like, get mad at your team. Get mad at your coaches. Like, yep. I'm just speaking what I've seen.
It's true. Bloodbath. That's the prediction. I mean, they're going to get bludgeoned on both sides of the ball. I've had 45-3.
So you just go straight to the prediction. No keys. You're just like Penn State wins.
Well, I think the lines are just too much. And then like, it's not going to be like the Oregon game where I felt like Oregon kind of let them hang around a little bit. Penn State's running game is for real. And while Jordan James is a nice back and their offensive line did some good things, Penn State's offensive line is just, they're going to run the ball a ton and set up play action pass. And it's just going to be bombs away.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up because I was watching the Penn State game this weekend against Illinois and thinking to myself, like, there just looks to be much more holes. Like it looks to be a much better offensive line for Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen. And in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, they just lost Olufoshanu last year. Like, they have a new left tackle in there that I don't think he is like first round NFL caliber guy. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he's bad. I forget his name off the top of my head. But like, overall, it seems like the fact that they have a offensive lineman in there that is not just like a pass pro specialist and just mean and physical on the offensive line, it almost feels like, you know, that is what's helping them run the ball better, which is interesting because you would think, oh, we have a first rounder on our offensive line, we're going to run the ball better. Well, one of the reasons why a guy is a first rounder, especially at the tackle position, is because he can pass protect. The NFL really doesn't care about rush, you know, run blocking. They care about, pass protecting and stuff like that. We got a comment from Jim over on the Voice College Football Big Ten channel. We appreciate you being here, Jim. Unfortunately, I can't bring your comment up on the screen. We're still looking to get that fixed, but we do appreciate you being here. He says, ridiculous they put UCLA in a noon Eastern game. This coming from a Penn State fan. I agree. I saw somebody talking about this and, you know, what this is kind of doing to the team and the players and, you know, how early they're going to have to get to the stadium and everything. And not just them, but like Penn State is like, not just them. Penn State is playing at noon, but everything they have to do to prepare for it and the time change, everything else, like this is going to be hard. Again, it's not at the Rose Bowl. It is in State College, but still, like, that's really, really tough. You talk about these travel concerns. That's really, really tough for a team, Zach.
Oh, yeah. It's the same thing. You know, we've been saying it week after week that the travel is really going to be a factor this season. And I think this is, I don't think UCLA would be on ups, or Penn State would be on upset alert if they were traveling to UCLA this week. But they certainly, I think, would get a better showing out of the Bruins.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just another factor where they're adjusting to the time change. Who knows when they're going to get to Pennsylvania? Probably on Friday. Like, they probably fly in on Friday. I would say
they need to get there on Thursday to adjust to the time change properly. Yeah. But you're
working off a 3-hour time change. So it's going to feel like 9 a.m. to them.
Yeah.
When it's game time. So that means you're getting up at what, 5 a.m. Pacific, maybe 4 to get ready to go through walkthroughs. It's nuts.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to get there on Thursday just to help your team readjust to, you know, the time change and everything like that. So, yeah, it's a crazy one. Zach, I'm right there with you with my score prediction. I have 45-10. I am going to give UCLA a touchdown in this one, whether that be late in the game.
You have them at double digits?
Yes, I do.
Upset!
Not Sorry. Upset.
Oh, okay.
Not an upset. 45-10, Penn State, but they will roll in this one. So, yeah. All right, Zach, let's hit a commercial really fast, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Indiana Hoosiers and the Northwestern Wildcats. We'll be right back, everybody. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minutes to Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description, minutesofsports.com. You won't be sorry. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, Indiana travels to Northwestern. Zach, have you heard about this Kirk Cignetti fella?
He's a pretty good coach.
I've heard that he knows what he's doing. He has the Hoosiers ranked 23 in the nation. They're 5-0 for the first time since 1967, and they're trying to stay unbeaten against Northwestern. I will be rooting heavily for Indiana in this one, because if Indiana loses, I will have to wear a hot dog costume on the show for an entire week. But first-year head coach Kirk Cignetti says his team is on a mission. Indiana 2-0 in the Big Ten is coming off a 42-28 win versus Maryland despite early turnovers. Curtis Rourke threw for 359 yards and 3 touchdowns. He also had 2 interceptions versus Maryland. The Northwestern Wildcats are 2-2, 0-1 in the Big Ten, and they're trying to bounce back from a 24-5 loss to Washington 2 weeks ago. The Wildcats QB Jack Lau struggled with 112 passing yards total offensive yards and 2 interceptions. Northwestern may get leading rusher Cam Porter back from injury. However, Indiana's wide receiver Elijah Surratt and Omar Cooper Jr. are key threats, both scoring last week. Northwestern actually leads this series all time, 47-35-1. Zach, what stands out to you in this game?
I think Northwestern, I hesitate to say this, but I think Northwestern actually poses a bit more of a threat to Indiana than people might want to give credit for because of the style of play. Northwestern wants to junk you up on defense. They're physical. You know, I said I have a man crush on Xander Mueller. Like, he is a traditional Big Ten linebacker.
He's a very good linebacker, yes.
He's very good. I think the defensive line for them is actually pretty underrated. And so I think this is a low scoring game in the first half. I think it also helps that it is on the lake. You know, it's at Northwestern. It's going to be more of a home field advantage for Northwestern, which I think it does matter for them. I think the question that I have is Indiana going to be content, you know, to kind of wait on their explosive plays? Because I think if not, I think Northwestern actually could have a chance in this game to make you wear a hot dog suit.
But I don't think so. Northwestern will get crushed in this one. No disrespect to David Braun, but the only thing Northwestern has going for them in this one is they have allowed 15.8 points per game, but Indiana has also only allowed 13 points per game in this one. And I don't, like, Zach, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, that the defense is good and they're going to junk them up. But at the end of the day, like, this Indiana team, they've scored so many points in every single game. Like, I think Northwestern has had very good defensive performances against, like, I'm trying to pull up the schedule really fast, but off the top of my head, like, they've had good defensive performances against Washington, who scored 19 points against Washington State, right? They had a good defensive performance against Duke, who they got shut out by North Carolina after North Carolina. Well, I don't know if they got shut out. I think they were shut out in the first half after North Carolina gave up like 70 points to James Madison. Miami of Ohio, they only gave up 6 points. Eastern Illinois, they only gave up 7. Like, they gave up 26 to Duke. So, like, I don't know. Like, I always hate the, well, who have they played thing, right? Because I think that gets so overused, and it is such a stupid thing to talk about, especially when you're talking about some of these good teams. Like, you are just looking at how does the team play, but of course not everybody watches every game, so they just revert to, well, who have they played? And it's like, well, that's stupid. But when I watch Northwestern play, they have been lights out against Eastern Illinois and Miami of Ohio. They let Washington score more points on them than they scored against Washington State. Miami of Ohio, yes, they only put up 6 points. I know this is a good MAC team, but still, it's a MAC team. Like, we just read off two MAC teams that are rushing with two of the three worst yards per game
in
the nation. So, I respect your opinion, but I can't get there with you, man.
Let me push back just a little bit. I mean, I agree with you. Like, I think this could be, it could look bad in the first half.
Okay. I can get with that.
Yeah. And I think if Northwestern had a credible offensive threat outside of Cam Porter, I think Cam Porter will have a good game in this game. Respect, you know, good game, 4 yards a carry. Like, that's what I mean by good game.
I could see that happening. Cam Porter's a good back.
I think the difference between like what could be an upset alert versus Indiana is that I think the poise of Indiana has just been off the charts, and I think they have too many playmakers.
Yeah.
So, I'll just say this. I agree with your assessment. This does kind of feel like the game that everybody writes Northwestern off on and then is like, how did Northwestern win that one? Which I don't think that'll happen, because I think this Indiana squad has just a different feel to it. But it's just one of those games where you're like, is Northwestern going to do something? Like last year, I felt like we had the same thought about them 4 or 5 weeks into the season. Like, they were 2-4, 1-5. And then all of a sudden they spring an upset. So I agree with your assessment. I'm just saying, just Northwestern in general has that weird feel where they come up and get you at the most random times, and you're like, how did that happen? And I think there could be that feeling at halftime.
I can get with you that it could be, I don't know if a close game, but Indiana could score less points at halftime than maybe they normally do. I could see a game where it's like Indiana 17 and Northwestern 7 or something like that at halftime. And it's kind of like, you know, oh, not that we're concerned, but, you know, Indiana has done better in the first half than this. And Northwestern's not a good football team, but then they come out in the second half. My score prediction in this one is 31-10. I do think Indiana, their offense struggles a little bit more, just because I do respect Northwestern's defense. But I don't see you know, this being a fight in the fourth quarter or anything like that. Like I said, I can see like 17-7, possibly 10-7 if there's a turnover or something like that. But I think Kirk Cignetti goes into the goes into the locker room and tears everybody apart and says, get out there and win the game. And then they go out and win because he said, yeah. You got students that aren't studying to watch these games.
That's hilarious. Our scores are actually pretty similar. I have 31-13.
Okay. All right. So we're pretty similar. All right. All right. Good analysis there. We got a few comments we're going to get to, and then we'll get to our next game really quick. We got Sean. He says, hey, JR. Hey, Sean. Appreciate you being here, man. And Mello is here as well. Mello from the Buckeye Boys. Just got done watching you and Devin and Tony over there before I hopped on here. Nice to see you here, Mello. Appreciate it. He also does not see IU losing this one. So he does not see me wearing a hot dog suit for an entire week. So, but you're Mello, that's also not giving me confidence, however strange things happen.
I'm just okay. That's my point. That's my point about my.
Did you see? Hold on, one more really fast. Doug Shepard asked, JR, did Illinois play a good game against Penn State? I gave them a good rating in my performance tiers. I felt like the defense did a pretty good job. I did think they got a little lucky with some missed field goals by Penn State. But, I mean, you know, like, I don't think they played bad. I don't think it was like a mid performance. I think the offensive line did their best, but the Penn State defensive line was just better. And I think Luke Altmyer had a good game when he was under duress, and he just – made a crucial turnover there at the end of the game, which is going to happen when you're under duress the entire game. So I definitely think there were aspects of Illinois that played well, but there were some that, you know, did not, mainly the offensive line.
Yeah.
What do you think, Zach?
I thought it played out the way I expected, right? Yeah. Like I expected Penn State to win by multiple scores because I think Penn State's the better team, but I thought Illinois put in a good showing. I love Altmyer.
Yeah. I like Altmyer a lot too. He has been sacked 14 times though this season. So it's really hard for him. And then Sean is asking, where's the robe? If you don't know, I'm over on an Ohio State podcast where they gifted me a robe and I do wear the robe most times over there, but it's hot up here again. And I can't be sweating on the podcast. So, sorry, Sean. All right, so let's talk about this really fast, Zach. We got this week. Did you see what I tweeted out about Bud Elliott?
Oh, I did. I did. And he clapped back at you.
Yeah, and I clapped right back as well because I was like, dude, this makes no sense. Like, all right, so if you missed it, Bud Elliott over on the Cover 3 podcast. I actually really like Bud Elliott, and Bud Elliott and I have exchanged a few messages, and so I've talked to him, and I really like Bud Elliott, but I just thought it was a completely asinine take from him to say that a 3-loss Ole Miss team would get in over an 11-1 Indiana team. And his entire point was is that Indiana's probably only going to play like 3 bowl teams this season, which I get. Indiana does not have a tough schedule. I get that. But like, I would get it if this Ole Miss team was facing Georgia, Alabama, you know, LSU, whatever. Like, I mean, they are facing LSU, but I'm talking about like top 3 in the SEC, LSU or something like that. I would get it if they're facing like all 3 of the top 3 teams. Tennessee, let's say that. I would get it if they're facing all 3 teams. They face Georgia. That's it. And Georgia just lost to Bama. And Georgia looks like their defense is crap. Like, I know that Alabama offense is really good, but like, you can't have the tackling performance that you did against Alabama and claim that you have a great defense. You just can't. I know Alabama has really shifty players, but still, like, you have got to be able to tackle. And on top of that, like, it just, and I clap back with him at this, with like, you do realize that the SEC played 9 conference games. Ole Miss would only have 4 teams on their schedule that are bowl teams. So like, if we're going to look at it that way, let's also make it the same way the other way. One of the reasons why the SEC gets so many bowl teams is because of their scheduling, where they only play 8 conference teams, and the half of their teams play an FCS team in November, and the other, which is Ole Miss, is one of them. Not this year. They play 4 non-conference games right at the beginning of their schedule. Mm-hmm. And then, which, you know, look what happens when they finally played a conference game. And then to Kentucky, of all teams, Kentucky, which everybody is raving about now, is like a great team because they played a close game to Georgia. They're not. Kentucky is not good. But of course, they're in the SEC, so everybody's going to say that they're good. And anyway, I could go on and on and on. Zach, do you have any thoughts on it?
The SEC, like, sunshine pumpers just annoy the crap out of me.
Which I'll give Bud Elliott credit. He is not normally an SEC sunshine and he's pumper. Not. He does talk a lot of recruiting, so he can at times. But he is not normally one of those people. He's not a Paul Feinbaum or a Gary Danielson or some of those guys.
Which it frustrates me, especially when then the guys who aren't normally that start to get on this thing where it's, you know, 11-1 Indiana shouldn't be in the playoff over 9-3. It's like, with what wins? Like, that's my question. Like, if Ole Miss goes 9-3, presuming they lose to LSU and Georgia, their best win would be against an Oklahoma who has no offense whatsoever. Like, what are we doing?
Yep.
Like, it's asinine. It's the only team in the SEC that could go 9-3 and make the playoff is Georgia, because their schedule is absurd. And I still don't know if they should get in.
Well, because Florida. But they're not going 9-3.
I was
going
to say, no, Florida. Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm just saying, if they did, they could make it.
I had to stop for a minute because I'm like, are you suggesting that Florida? No, you're not suggesting that. Never mind.
I'm just saying, if they were 9-3, they would be.
Yep. Oh, man.
But here, I got the schedule right here. Look at the schedule. I mean, look at these crap. First four games. You're going to tell me that Indiana, like, you're going to comment on them and talk about how terrible of a schedule they have when Ole Miss plays Furman, which, like, you know, the SEC is the only conference in the world where they get credit for beating an FCS team by 70, you know, because recruiting and everything. Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest. Oh, congrats. You went to Wake Forest. What has Wake Forest done this year? Nothing. They're a bad football team. Yep. And then Georgia Southern. Congrats. You beat four bad teams. I mean, Wake Forest is essentially a G5 team at this point.
Yeah. You know, Middle Tennessee has lost by 28 to Western Kentucky, lost by 28 to Duke, and they hosted Duke, and they still lost by 28, and they lost by 17 to Memphis. Get that schedule out of here.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, the four teams that would be bowl eligible if the SEC had to play a non-conference schedule would be Georgia, Oklahoma maybe. I don't even know if Oklahoma would be for sure. I know that they're ranked right now. That's not a good football team. Jackson Arnold is not a good quarterback, and they have an okay defense. They're not going to survive the SEC. They might not even make a bowl game this year. And then LSU, another overrated team. I mean, this is a completely overrated team that's not very good, but somehow they're 13th in the polls. And then South Carolina, UK, one of those teams aren't making a bowl team if you play a 9-game conference schedule. It's just asinine. It's completely ridiculous.
It's insane.
Yeah.
But, man. Well, you know who else? You know, Wake Forest, their one other power forward team. They lost to Virginia. Virginia stinks. They lost to Louisiana, not Louisiana State, Louisiana.
Yeah.
What are we doing? It says on Yahoo, they're 17th in the ACC. I know that that's not exactly accurate because they've only played a couple of conference games, but still.
Yeah.
What do we, Ole Miss.
Just ridiculous.
Ole Miss is a fraud. That's what they are. Just like Missouri is a fraud. Just like Oklahoma is a fraud, just like LSU is a fraud. I don't mean frauds as in, like, maybe some of these teams finish in the top 25. They're not playoff teams.
Yeah. Which, like, in that situation, you're saying that Ole Miss plays three ranked teams on their schedule because none of those other teams are getting ranked. Florida's not getting ranked. Kentucky's not getting ranked. Kentucky's going to lose here soon. They might jump into the rankings for a minute or two, but I mean, they just lost to Kentucky, so it doesn't really matter. Like, if they're 9-3, they've lost all of their ranked games. And if Indiana is 11-1, they've beaten either Ohio State or Michigan.
Yeah.
And they've beat Nebraska, who was a ranked team at one point. But, you know, because the SEC beats their teams ranked when they're ranked and not after, you know, because they play an 8-game conference schedule. Anyway, Darren talks ball is here as well. Darren, we appreciate you being here. He says, ever wonder what Notre Dame would look like if they joined a conference? Ole Miss. That's a good point.
Shots fired. Can I have a question.
Yes.
Do you think Indiana beats Kentucky?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. So, like, why are we even talking about this? They can beat a team that Ole Miss didn't.
Honestly, Minnesota would beat Kentucky. Like, it's a lot of Big Ten teams that would beat Kentucky.
That's a spicy take.
You go to Minnesota, like, Minnesota would win that game. There's a lot of Big Ten teams that would beat Kentucky.
Yeah. Their quarterback issue is a problem.
Yeah.
I mean,
Rutgers said bye-bye Gavin Wimsatt, and Kentucky was like, hey, yeah, come over here. We'll make you a focal point of our offense. Okay. Anyway, I'm not trying to bash Gavin Wimsatt. I actually like Gavin Wimsatt, but yeah. Anyway.
We're bashing the SEC. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Speaking of Minnesota, we have Minnesota and USC coming up this weekend. USC takes on Minnesota this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Huntington Bake Stadium in Minneapolis, airing on the Big Ten Network. USC enters the game with a 3-1 record, 1-1 in the Big Ten. They recently lost a close game to Michigan that bounced back with a solid second half to win 38-21 against Wisconsin. Don't ask them about the first half. This game is crucial for the Trojans to maintain their conference standings. On the other hand, Minnesota stands at 2-3 and 0-2 in the Big Ten. They are coming off back-to-back losses to Michigan and Iowa, but they showed resilience with a strong fourth quarter comeback against the Wolverines. Honestly, probably would have been closer if the ref made the right call. But the game odds have USC favored at -350 on the money line and a spread of -9. Total points are set at 51.5. Quarterback matchups are key here, with USC's Miller Moss throwing for 1,198 yards this season and 8 touchdowns, while Minnesota's Max Brosmer has thrown for 1,094 yards and 6 touchdowns. With both teams eager to get a win, expect an exciting showdown this Saturday. Zach, what stands out to you here?
Well, for one, of all the lines, this is actually the one that's closer that I'm surprised that it's not as close. And it opened at 9.5, and it's down to 8.
Is it now? Okay.
Yeah. So somebody knows something about this game when a line moves like that much in favor of the underdog.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting one to think about. I just to be, you know, point blank on this one, this is one of my upset alerts. I am actually going to pick Minnesota in this one. Ooh. I have been kind of high on Minnesota so far this season. I think that they showed resilience there at the end of that Michigan game, and I think that Darius Taylor is still a really good back. I think he struggled, and I think Max Brosmer is a better quarterback than people are giving credit for. I understand Minnesota fans are not happy with PJ Fleck, and I agree, if he keeps losing, you know, I wouldn't be happy with him either. But I do think this offense is showing some better things than we've seen from Minnesota offenses in the past. I think they're a little bit more versatile and they're a little bit more balanced. I do think they need to get that running game going a little bit more, especially against a team like USC. You know, USC is not the team of old where they couldn't tackle, but this is still a USC team that I would not say is known for their defense. And I really like the matchup of Minnesota's pass defense against Miller Moss. I think that Minnesota has an underrated defensive line that could, you know, get a lot of pressure on Miller Moss. And honestly, against Wisconsin, Wisconsin has a bad defensive line and they were able to get pressure on Miller Moss. Miller Moss is still not checking things at the line of scrimmage. He's still not shifting his protection. And that worries things for me if I'm a USC fan. So I'm going to pick Minnesota in this one to win 24-20. And honestly, like, I feel pretty confident in it. Like, I didn't feel super confident in the Wisconsin one last week. That was just kind of one that I picked because I wanted to pick an upset and I wanted to look for one. But this one, they're going to Minnesota. Like, I think that Minnesota's strengths line up well against USC's strengths. And I think that if Minnesota is able to have good pass defense and they're able to get pressure on the quarterback in this one, I think Max Brosmer will throw it around a little bit. And I think Darius Taylor is going to have a really good game in this one.
Do we know if Justin Wally and Darius Green are back for this game? I know they were out against Michigan.
That was one of the injuries I forgot to check. I'll check that really fast.
I feel like what you just said Like, I feel like we are on a similar vibe, but with different conclusions, very similar to the Illinois-Nebraska pick a couple weeks ago. And even Illinois-Kansas, where in my gut, I kind of feel like I like Minnesota because they're tough in the trenches. USC is not. Minnesota has...
Especially the offensive line. I actually am not that low on the defensive line. I think the defensive line is kind of getting a little bit of the backlash of the offensive line. I'm not saying they're good. I'm just saying like they're not nearly as bad as the offensive line.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I think Ja Joyner and the rest of Minnesota's defensive line, I think, can get pressure on Miller Moss. I think especially if Justin Wally is back, I think that defensive backfield can at least slow down a pretty good receiving core. I think Jacoby Lane's really emerged for USC. Obviously, Zachariah Branch, he's their most shifty player. I wouldn't say he's their best receiver, but certainly their shiftiest. Yeah, he's definitely he definitely scares you every time he touches the ball. And Woody Marks has been solid at running back. But so there's a part of me that I see though Minnesota, and I'm like, I think they have underrated receivers. I think Brosmer is starting to play better. I think their offense is starting to hit their stride. You know, they did a great job against Michigan in the second half last week. I just don't know, even though it's at home, it's hard for me to pick against USC and to pick Minnesota for a couple reasons. One is I do think the playmakers for USC, they can score in a hurry, I think, against this team. Mm-hmm. Second, I like the coaching matchup for USC a lot more than Minnesota.
That was my next question, was who's the better coach, Lincoln Riley or PJ Fleck?
I think it's Lincoln Riley, and I think it's not close.
I don't think it's not close. I think it's Lincoln Riley with Dan Lynn. Since he has Dan Lynn on that defense, I think it's Lincoln Riley. But if he had Alex Grinch,
that's fair. Well, but Alex Grinch,
this is a hypothetical.
Alex Grinch takes a good coach all the way down, like to the basement. So
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he ain't there anymore. He's gone. So what's your score on this?
My score 24-20.
Okay. We're similar but different. I have 27-20 USC.
I think USC has come out to some slow starts lately, and I don't think you can do that against this Minnesota team. I say that, you know, remembering Iowa 2 weeks ago. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think that USC has a running back. Like I just said, Woody Marks is a good running back, but I think Woody Marks does all of the things that is not running the football well. And I'm not saying he doesn't run the football well. I'm just saying like the pass protection and some of that stuff, like that stuff he does well, but I don't think he is going to pull off a Kalel Mullins run or a Caleb Johnson run all the way down the field, you know, and break off these huge runs. He might, but I don't think he's going to do it consistently. And so I think it's going to be really hard for USC to pass the ball down the field. I don't know what's going to happen with Wally. I mean, it's one of those ones where like, PJ Fleck, he never lets injury information get out. So, I mean, you ask him about it, he's just going to give you coach speak, or he's just going to not comment on it at all. So it's any guess if he's going to be back or not. But I still think there's good enough players in the secondary that they should be able to slow down USC enough to hold them to 20 points.
Yeah.
Especially with the defensive line pressure. Sorry, go ahead.
It's interesting with that because I think USC's pathway to victory is very different than Michigan's, which Michigan, it's like they just need to churn out yards on the ground. Whereas USC almost, they need to rely on the short to intermediate passing game, which relies on Miller Moss to be good all the time. And I think to your point, if he's not checking in and out of plays and they catch him on bad reads, they can really sting him. And that could be the pathway to victory for Minnesota. So I agree with you on the upset alert. I just think USC is a little bit more talented, but
yeah,
I would not be surprised if what you said happens.
I definitely agree. USC is more talented, and if they do the things that I'm talking about, you know, checking the line of scrimmage, getting the offensive line better, stuff like that, USC will win this game. I just haven't seen it yet from Miller Moss. And until I see it, I'm not going to feel confident in it.
That's fair. So, yeah, that's fair.
All right, Zach, we're going to hit a commercial really fast, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about the Iowa-Ohio State game. Mm-hmm. The Big Ten Huddle is brought to you by The College Huddle, the largest fan-led college sports podcast community on the internet. With contributors from 70 different schools, you will get in all kinds of analysis from all over the country. Go visit thecollegehuddle.com to find your team and read articles from all across so many fans and contributors. The College Huddle is fan-made, fan-driven, and fan-fueled. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, please do remember to like and subscribe whether you're watching on the Big Ten Huddle or the Voice of College Football Big Ten channel. We appreciate that. Like and subscribe. Number 3, Ohio State is 4-0, and they face Iowa, who is 3-1 this Saturday. Probably should be 4-0, but that Iowa State game happened. Ohio State has outscored opponents by an average of 42 points and dominates the second half, outscoring teams 91-3 after halftime. Zach, Ohio State's defense has allowed just 60 to 61 yards in second halves of recent games. Iowa will rely on controlling the ball with star running back Caleb Johnson, who is number 2 nationally with 685 yards and averages 9.8 yards per carry. Ohio State boasts a balanced offense with running backs Quinshon Judkins and Trayvon Henderson, 666 combined rushing yards, 9 touchdowns, and a standout wide receiver and freshman, Jeremiah Smith, who has 5 touchdown catches on the season, 1 rushing touchdown as well. Iowa's QB, Cade McNamara, has been efficient, aiming for mistake-free football, but will face Ohio State's second-ranked defense. Iowa's coach, Kirk Ferentz, knows containing Ohio State's multifaceted offense will be a very tough challenge. Zach, where do you stand on this game?
There's a part of me that wants to pick a bigger blowout, because I look at the matchup and I'm like, Iowa's one-dimensional. And I think Ohio State, when having to plan for a one-dimensional attack defensively, I think they can shut it down. And I think offensively, I think they can overwhelm this Iowa defense, especially because they have not done a good job of stopping the big play through the air. And so you've got an alien in Jeremiah Smith and a first-round receiver in Emeka Ebuka, and probably a guy who'd be the number one receiver on most teams in Carnell Tate. And you're like, this should be a pretty significant blowout. But I just think Iowa is going to find a way to sit on the ball and to move the chains. I think Caleb Johnson might have like 35 carries in this game. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe 2 or 3 drives that take about 7 to 8 minutes long each. And because of that, that's going to take the air out of the ball. It's going to limit possessions. I think Caleb Johnson gets over 100 yards in this game. And I think because of that, I think they get a couple scores. They get a couple touchdowns in this game. I still think Ohio State's efficient. I think it's close at half. I think it's a little lower scoring. I've got 34-17 in this game.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if I see Ohio State allowing 17 to Iowa unless there is some kind of pick six or something like that from Iowa, or like a fumble recovery. I remember, what was it, 2 years ago, when was it, Jack Campbell?
Jack Campbell.
CJ Stroud fumbled the sack and Jack Campbell picked it up and went for a touchdown. So like, obviously something like that is entirely possible. Will Howard's also only been sacked 1 time this season in his 4 games, which is really impressive for an offensive line everybody was projecting would be one of Ohio State's biggest weaknesses going into the season. And honestly, the Ohio State offensive line has been really good at blocking. So really I'm with you. Like, when Iowa comes in and they're one dimensional with Caleb Johnson, if Iowa had a running quarterback, I would feel more icky about this one and maybe pick Iowa to score a couple more times. But I mean, Cade McNamara is a statue. I know he beat Ohio State 2 or 3 years ago, however long ago it was. But at the end of the day, like, this Iowa team, I think they have good pieces. But I think Ohio State has great pieces everywhere, and it's going to be really, really difficult for Iowa to try and muster up enough rushing yards to score and enough time possession in order to score as well. So I will say, though, one thing Iowa does have going for them is that Ohio State fans have been very critical of their linebacker play the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's my big concern.
Yeah, Ohio State is starting Sonny Styles, a former safety who now plays down at linebacker, which Ohio State fans are not very happy with. And then leader of the defense, Cody Simon, is starting kind of like that middle linebacker role. Now, I don't think Cody Simon has been much of an issue this year, but many Ohio State fans are upset with Sonny Styles. So my question is does Sonny Styles play the most snaps of any linebacker two games in a row, or do they get Arvell Reese in there, the backup linebacker who has been better almost in every single place statistically, and when I say statistically I mean like PFF grades, stuff like that, or do they continue to go with Sonny Styles? I don't know what they will do, but Ohio State's defense stops everybody, so as much as like people are upset with the linebackers, I also kind of feel like it's just nitpicking at this point because nobody has been able to move the ball on them consistently for an entire game, not just like a few drives here and there.
I think 17 for me, it can come, I think, on a defensive score. I think it could come on a bad angle from Styles. Because I do think,
I mean, Caleb Johnson has home run ability. Like if you let him get loose,
And I the other thing with that, Iowa's offensive line will be the best offensive line that this D line has faced. And I know Tyleek is probably coming back this week. I think this will be a telling matchup for Ohio State's D-line, and if they are actually ready for the better offensive lines in the conference and in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. I think that this offensive line is going to be a really good test. I don't know if this is the best pass-protecting offensive line. I think Michigan State has a better pass-protecting offensive line, but definitely run-blocking. I think this is the best run blocking offensive line that Ohio State has seen so far. So it's going to be really interesting.
I was going to say over under, how many sacks do you think Ohio State gets in this game?
Well, I think if they do pass, I don't think they're going to let Cade McNamara stand back there very long because they know he's a statue and they know he's not going to be able to move around very much. I'd say over under 2.5.
Okay.
I'd probably take the under.
The under.
What would you take? Yeah.
I'd probably pick the over on sacks. Unless if they just don't drop back, which is probably their game plan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Iowa is going to try to take a bunch of deep shots with Cade McNamara.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think they might try to run some play action and stuff like that, and Ohio State might get them a couple times on play action with Cade McNamara's back to the defense and JT or Jack Sawyer or even Tyleek. If Tyleek Williams is back in this game, that's going to be a huge thing for Ohio State, which he should be. It sounded like he was good to play this last week, or was it 2 weeks ago that he was good to play? One of those two.
It was this week. This week, yeah, he was good.
They just kind of put him in like emergency role. So, but if Tyleek Williams is back, I mean, they're bound to get at least one sack. He just wrecks the middle so much, and frees up the other guys. So, my prediction in this one is going to be 31-10. Either that score is a Caleb Johnson long run that Sonny Styles or one of the linebackers gets beat. I do think they have Caleb Downs back there, who is like a heat-seeking missile that helps if a linebacker gets beat. Or there will be some kind of defensive touchdown, whether that be a pick six or a fumble or something like that, that, Iowa will take advantage of. Iowa just has a way of doing that. I don't believe in Iowa's special teams as much this season. I don't think they'll get a special team score.
No, so. I agree.
All right.
Mello said Tyleek is back. They said it in the presser today.
Okay. I haven't listened to the presser yet today. I need to listen to that after this. So, all right, cool. Thanks, Mello. Appreciate you bringing that up. He also says Sonny is starting every game unless he gets hurt, and hopefully he doesn't get hurt. Yeah, I think the conversation about somebody starting over him is kind of ridiculous, but I definitely think you can see somebody like Arvell Reese start getting more snaps. I'm not saying more snaps than him. I'm just saying like getting more snaps and cutting into Sonny's snap count a little bit more, but we'll see. It's interesting to think about. So, all right, Zach, let's move on to Oregon at Michigan State in this one. Correct? It's at Michigan State?
And it's at Oregon. At Oregon.
Oh, okay. All right. The thing was, I thought the thing was backwards. I apologize. We have Michigan State at Oregon. Oregon hosts Michigan State on Friday night. The Ducks are coming off a dominant 34-13 win over UCLA. The Spartans aim to rebound with 31-point loss from a 31-point loss to Ohio State. Michigan State's head coach Jonathan Smith previously coached for Oregon State, leading them to an upset over Oregon in 2022. Strong linebacker play, solid defense, and a potent offense led by quarterback Dylan Gabriel. Michigan State has had offensive struggles, ranking low nationally in rushing and scoring, plagued by turnovers. Oregon and Michigan State last met in the 2018 Red Box Bowl, where Oregon won in Big Ten fashion 7-6. Zach, what stands out to you in this game?
Can we say that this is actually the official Big Ten debut of Oregon? They made so much of an issue about last week being Oregon's Big Ten debut, and I'm like, you played UCLA.
Yeah, it was.
What the heck?
What's
so ridiculous? My gosh!
You play a Pac-12 team, for
and an awful one to begin. I mean, my gosh.
Yeah.
Big Ten Network. It was on Big Ten Network, or was it on Fox?
I think it was Peacock, wasn't it?
Was it Peacock? Well, they're terrible too.
Fox, so, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It was Fox's E crew that had to work the 11 o'clock shift. Yeah. So I think there's a little bit of upset alert here.
Are you calling it upset alert?
I'm not calling it, but I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised. There's one I am calling for sure. This is not it. But I will say this. I have been just continually underwhelmed by the Ducks. You know, the one exception being their win against Oregon State. And, you know, to your point about the line play for Michigan State, I think Oregon's defensive line will give Michigan State's offensive line problems. I think Michigan State's defensive line is going to give Oregon's offensive line problems. And I think we're going to see a lot of disruption in this game. I think we might see Gabriel take a few sacks. Cal Halliday, again, old school Big Ten linebacker. But I mean, they have other talent around him too. And I think they're going to get some pressure. I think they're going to help have this offense stall for Oregon. And I think Chiles on the other end, despite the talent for Oregon's defense, I think he's going to get a couple of big plays with Marsh, with Glover, with those receivers. And so I think this game will be closer. At the end of the day, I do think Oregon has too much. And I have 34-24, ultimately.
I'm going to put this one on upset alert. I think that
Michigan State's... Are you calling the upset?
I am. I think that Michigan State's defensive line is going to be able to do a lot against Oregon here. I think that their linebackers are fantastic. I think that they're going to shut down the running game here. Jordan Turner, Cal Halliday, those guys. I think that Oregon is not going to have much of a running game in this one, and that's going to be really impactful for them. Now, obviously, Dylan Gabriel is Dylan Gabriel. You know, he can make some highlight plays and stuff like that. So I don't think they're going to shut down Dylan Gabriel, but I do think that they're going to make life for Dylan Gabriel in the backfield very difficult. And I think that you're going to see him, you know, stressed out, trying to get the ball out quick. And you can see some press coverage from Michigan State that really leads to, you know, some knockdown passes, maybe a pick six that goes the other way. You know, they pick off a screen pass or a slant or something like that. And I think that the real question here is, does Michigan State do enough on offense to make Aiden Chiles not feel like he has to play hero ball? This is where Michigan State gets in the most trouble, where Aiden Chiles goes out there and feels like he is the only option for this offense. I think Michigan State has a good pair of running backs. Nate Carter and Katron Lynch Adams is not, like, they are not a bad running back duo. It's actually kind of an underrated running back duo in my mind, especially in the Big Ten. However, this duo needs to be getting, you know, yards on the ground in order to take the pressure off of Aiden Chiles. If Aiden Chiles can go with zero interceptions in this game, which I know is a very difficult thing to do because he's thrown a lot of interceptions, but if he can throw zero interceptions in this game, Zach, there were seriously some balls that Aiden Chiles threw against Ohio State that just dropped my mouth. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, how did you just make that throw? One in particular was a post route to the outside where he just dropped it in a bucket. The Ohio State cornerback, I think it was Jordan Hancock, and that one had very good coverage. Aiden Childs just dropped it right in there, dropped it right behind the shoulder of his receiver, and like, there's nothing you can do to defend that. Now, if Aiden Childs can put that together consistently, that's going to be fantastic. That's kind of the question for me is, can Aiden Childs do that consistently enough where he doesn't feel like all the pressure is on him? And can he, you know, make enough plays toward the end of the game for his team to come out on top? I think it's a really risky pick because of those reasons. But if they can make that happen, I feel strongly that Oregon will not score more than 24 points in this game just because of that defensive line and those linebackers that Michigan State has. But we're going to have to see it from the offense. Now, if Aiden Childs throws three picks, they'll score over 24 points just because turning the ball over so much. But just based off driving the ball down the field, if Michigan State does a good job of pinning them deep and that kind of stuff, they could do a really good job. Yep.
So you what's your prediction, score prediction?
27-24 Michigan State.
Okay. Yeah, I have 34-24. I think part of the reason why I have Oregon scoring more is I'm assuming there will be a pick or two for Childs.
Right.
But
I'm banking on there won't be any turnovers.
Yeah. And I think if that happens, I think you might be spot on, because ultimately, I think Oregon needs some chaos to be successful on defense. I shouldn't say to be successful, but I think with Michigan State's talent, like, guys, you have to understand Michigan State is better than we thought coming into the season. They have more talent. And I think Jonathan Smith has really coached them up. So I agree that I think if they play a clean game, I think this is an upset. I just don't think they're going to play a clean game.
Which, if you look at the ESPN SP Plus, Michigan State's defense is only four spots behind Oregon's defense. And Oregon has played a much weaker schedule than Michigan State has. So I know everybody wants to point out Boise State, like some contender or something like that. Let's get it straight. They're a contender to be a G5 playoff team. Like, we got to stop acting like G5 playoff team contender is like a top 10 team in the country. They're not. Like, yes, Ashton Dentry is very good and he can run the ball very well, but it's still Boise State, right? Like, I'm trying to be disrespectful here, but let's stop asking like Oregon played some spectacular team in their non-conference. They played Idaho, Boise State, and who was the other one? Oregon State. Like, it's not a great out of conference. And I realize that Oregon State beat Purdue. Big whoop. A lot of teams beat Purdue.
Well, and the reality too is Oregon should have lost to Boise State. Like, they got really lucky.
Yeah. And so they needed two special teams touchdowns.
Yeah. Now Steely Matt makes a good point. Short week road game. So for Sparty. So, I mean, that is another factor to consider, but it's also a 9 PM game and you're traveling West Coast. So, and that actually could be against Michigan State's favor too, because for them, it'll feel like, oh no, it's 9 PM Eastern. So 6 PM. Never mind. Forget that I said that.
We'll see. We'll see. It is a Friday night game. I'm also banking on the fact that every Friday night game has been a close game so far this season. So, Steely Matt, I hear you, man, that it's going to be, or who was that? Was that Steely Matt? Troy, I hear you, man. Oregon winning by 17. We haven't seen that on Friday night yet. So I'm looking for the Friday night magic to continue, that it's got close game till the end of it all. So
it's beautiful.
The only game that wasn't close was Indiana versus an FCS team. Probably one of the worst FCS teams I've ever seen. So.
Oh, dear.
All right. One more commercial break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about Michigan versus Washington, and then we'll talk about Rutgers versus Nebraska. Stay with us. Homefield is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Homefield brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Homefield digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, also on the Voice of College Football Big Ten channel, Michigan and Washington face off in a rematch of last season's national title game. Michigan won the championship game 34-13, but both teams look very much different this year. Michigan 4-1, 2-0 in the Big Ten, is coming off a close win over Minnesota, extending their conference win streak to 27 games. Washington is 3-2, 1-1 in the Big Ten, and has a new head coach in Jed Fish and nearly a full roster of new starters, new transfers, new everything. Washington's losses have been close, including a 21-18 defeat at Rutgers last week. Key players: Michigan's Kalel Mullins has 540 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns, and Washington's Jonah Coleman has 104.2 rushing yards per game, and QB Will Rogers has 1,354 yards passing, 10 touchdowns. This will be Michigan's first road game of the season in a hostile environment, and Zach, Washington is favored. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts were I was going to put an upset alert until I realized that the favorite was Washington, because I think Washington's going to win.
Wow. Well, so I have a couple things. And I'm not trying to fight for Michigan here, so don't get mad at me. But Will Johnson is probably going to be back. Sure. Josiah Stewart is probably going to be back in this one. They were both missing against Minnesota, so I do think that plays an impact. And the Washington, I forget his name off the top of my head, I'll have to look it up. The Washington defensive tackle has a torn Achilles, and he is now out for the year. So you're having players lost from Washington, and you are gaining two players back for Michigan. Does that play a factor at all to you, Zach?
No.
Wow. All right.
So I think there's a couple reasons why. One, so I do think the offensive tackle for being out for Washington does play a factor, and Josiah Stewart being back, certainly, because Michigan's defensive line, when healthy, you know, we're talking about top five defensive lines. They are a top five defensive line in the country with Josiah Stewart, with Mason Graham, with
I would say Grant. Starters, top defensive line starters.
Yeah. I'm not talking. Here's my butt.
I think it falls off when you see Benny and the other defensive tackle go in there. I think that's when you have to rush up the middle. Anyway, go ahead, Zach. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, and this is my butt. But when Kenneth Grant gets tired, which we've brought up multiple times on this show, they're a liability. And I think while Will Johnson has been great, I don't know if he's been best corner in the country great, he's been very good.
Yeah. Credit to Will Johnson. He's been very good. He's, you know, had a couple pick sixes and stuff like that, but he's also been cooked a number of times quarterbacks just either haven't thrown it or they threw it and they missed. Go ahead. Sorry.
So the reality is this will be the third team that they've faced that have had multiple receivers that I think scare you. Giles Jackson, Denzel Boston. Denzel Boston is having himself a heck of a year so far. 30 catches, 412 yards, 7 touchdowns. And you got a quarterback who's been around the block for a bit, and Will Rogers, who I think has played pretty good ball.
Oh yeah.
And Here's the nightmare scenario for Michigan. You go on the road and you get down quick, 14-0. And all of a sudden, you don't have the ability to get back in this game because you don't have a quarterback that can throw. So that's I think that's the biggest struggle is, at some point, I think Washington's defense is good enough to hold Michigan's run game at bay to start the game, to get a lead. And I think if they get a 2-score lead, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, and I want to preface this, Michigan fans, I've sung your praises this season, so don't get mad at me and call me a hater or anything like that. But I'm just going to be real for a second. Michigan needs to win a certain way. There are a lot of teams out there that can win, but they need to win a certain way. Michigan has to get up by 2 or 3 scores in the first half in order to win a game. It just has to happen. You have to be up, because in the second half, your defense gets tired. And let's just be honest, I think this is the bigger factor than getting tired. Wink Martindale does not adjust. Wink Martindale runs the same base defense the entire game. And I'll give him credit. He has blitzed less these past couple weeks because he's realized that he doesn't need to with his defensive line. But that is starting to affect things towards the end of the game. He starts blitzing more toward the end of the game, and then guys get open on the back end. I think even if he's not blitzing in this one, I think that Washington's offensive line is better at pass protection than USC's. And on top of that, I think Will Rogers is a more experienced quarterback who is doing more at the line of scrimmage, checking and getting his guys to shift protection much better than a Miller Moss was doing at USC. And on top of that, Giles Jackson and Denzel Boston, like, this is one of, I won't say if the best, because I think Ohio State has the best, but this is one of the best wide receiver duos in the country. Will Johnson can only cover one of them. And Will Rogers is savvy enough that if he sees Will Johnson creeping up, he's going to pump, and Will Johnson's going to bite, and the guy's going to get by him. Like, this is not, you're not facing Max Brosmer, who's playing FBS football for the very first time. You're not facing Miller Moss, who is his first year starting, who albeit has been, you know, very good, and he's very talented, but it's his first year starting. You are facing Will Rogers, a veteran quarterback who, in my mind, the only reason this team is not 5-0 is because the kicker hasn't kicked and Jed Fish has made stupid calls. And unless that happens again in this one, I think Washington comes out on top.
Yeah. I think that's the big if, right? Is, are they going to play undisciplined, and is Jed Fish going to call things like a speed option to the boundary on fourth and one.
Right. Which, the undisciplined play as well is something that has to be considered. Yes.
Yeah. But I think we're on the same wavelength. I've got 24-13 Washington over Michigan.
I have it a little bit closer. I think that you know, Michigan will move the ball a little bit and they'll have some better time of possession, but I think that they'll stall out once they get into the other side of the field, and I think they'll kick maybe 3 or 4 field goals in this one, and I think you see Washington, and I think Washington will not try to kick very many field goals. They might try to kick 1 or 2, but they're not going to try to kick very many, and I think Washington wins this one 21-19. Now, I will say, as much as I am singing the praise of Will Rogers does have to be better on third down. I've seen a number of incompletions from Will Rogers the past few weeks. I wonder if I can get the ESPN splits for it really fast, but he's not been fantastic, at least the past couple of weeks, on third down. I don't know what the splits look like. Of course, those could be a little influence one way or the other, but that's goal to go. I don't want to do. Okay. 23 for 34, 68% completion percentage, and 5.9 yards per attempt. He's been sacked once, 3 carries for negative 13 yards. So, you know, it's not bad numbers, but on third down, you'd like to see somebody be over 70% completion percentage, especially when you have the run game of Jonah Coleman, who is going to oftentimes have you in favorable third down situations.
Yeah. Agreed. So yeah.
That's going to be a big part for him. So,
yeah, I think that continues to play into just the weakness of Washington, which is undisciplined play, not good situationally. And so I think that is something we have to watch out for in this game, is I think Washington from a roster standpoint actually might be better suited to win this game. But do they play well enough from a discipline standpoint, from a situational football standpoint? But I just don't think Michigan has the team that can come back, and I don't think they're going to score early.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. We got Troy in the chat. He, Ohio State fan, says Washington 72. Last-second field goal, so they get shut out. That would be one for the record books there, Troy. But he says, if you're going to dream large. Thanks, Troy. And then G Gamed, he disagrees with us. He says Washington is not beating Michigan, and looks like he's laughing there, Zach. I think there's a good chance Washington beats Michigan.
It seems like Steely Matt is saying that those are comments made by someone else.
Yeah, he's quoting what Michigan fans have told him.
So, okay.
Yeah. So he's acting like a Michigan fan in the chat. So I mean, I'm not one of those people that is obviously like, you know, oh, Michigan sucks and they just get lucky and stuff like that. I think there are aspects of what Michigan does well. Again, I have told Michigan fans what they do well. I'm not just some hater. But I also look at this game and say, Washington has a good run defense. Now, we'll see what happens without their starting defensive tackle, but they do have a good run defense. This is a defense that's been good against the run this season. I think that they do have a good quarterback and good weapons on the outside. And I think if you're going to attack this Michigan defense, you're going to have good weapons on the outside, and you're going to have an experienced quarterback who is able to toss the ball around, which Will Rogers is. So, yeah. I mean, obviously the big factor here is if this Michigan defensive line can get huge pressure on Will Rogers the entire game. I think they will in the first half. We'll see if it happens the entire game though.
One other factor, and I think you already mentioned it, but I think it's important to highlight. Jonah Coleman last game against a good run defense in Rutgers, 16 carries, 148 yards.
Yeah.
Jonah Coleman's going to be a problem in this game, especially in the second half when Kenneth Grant is tired.
Yeah.
Because I think they'll run right at the backup defensive tackles, and I think Jonah Coleman will have a big day.
I mean, if this game is tied, or if Michigan is only up one score at halftime, I mean, put money on Washington, because Washington's going to come out and have a much better second half. Every team has. Arkansas State, I mean, Texas is the only team that didn't, because they, you know, they stopped trying in the second half. But Arkansas State, Minnesota, who was the other team, USC, like, they've all had much more successful second halves than they did first halves. So, you know, Michigan, if they're not up by three scores in this one in the first half, like, it's probably not going to go off for them.
Yeah.
So, PSU Jim says Rutgers ran for 184 yards against Washington. Washington D isn't that good against the run. I mean, but Rutgers is also, they also have Kyle Manungai and Samuel Brown. So, yeah. I see what you're saying there, PSU Jim, but, like, I think that's also one of the best rushing attacks in the nation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kyle Manungai led the Big Ten last year.
Yeah.
So I think it's easy to look at the helmet and be like, well, Rutgers isn't very good. I would push back and say, like, Kyle Manungai and Sam Brown is one of the best 1-2 punches, and their offensive line is actually pretty good this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. At Rutgers. Rutgers has one of the best offensive lines in the nation. That's no joke. Yep. Yeah. Now, who did they lose last game though? They lost, was it Needham? Needleham?
Oh, no? I don't remember.
They lost one of their offensive linemen last game, so I don't know if that'll affect them. But he says Rutgers is pretty good, but Michigan has a better O-line than Rutgers. No.
Evan Link is not.
Evan Link is awful. That center is awful. Miles Hinton just got hurt. He might be back next game, but even he's not very good. That guard duo is not great. I know Michigan has had a great offensive line the past few years, but this offensive line is nowhere near what we've seen the past few years. So
yeah, it's. I mean, there's definitely been a little bit of growth, but it's.
I mean, it's, you still see on every pass play though, Evan Link is getting beat.
Yeah,
I mean, it's almost every single pass play.
Yeah.
And that center's getting pushed back every single time.
Yeah.
Whether it's Crippen or Giudice, both times.
I think it's easy to make the assumption because of the helmet.
Right. But, and like I said, Hinton might not be back. And I don't even think Hinton's been all that good. But who was it that came in for him? Was it Petrie? I didn't think Petrie was all that good when he came in for him against Minnesota. Okay. So
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm a Buckeye hater. If I'm a Buckeye hater. It is what it is, but that's my thoughts.
Yeah.
So, Mello's with us though. He says, no, they don't. Rutgers O-line is running for the Joe Moore Award. He also says, grant it, the season is early. However, they're on pace for it. It's true.
Yeah.
Sure. Rutgers. I need to look up who the offensive lineman was that got injured, though. I need to figure that out. All right, Zach, game of the week right here. Rutgers, Nebraska. To me, I know neither team is ranked, but to me, this is the game of the week in this Absolutely. Situation. Rutgers, what were you going to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Rutgers is 4-0, remains unbeaten, but faces a tough Big Ten road game at Nebraska. Head coach Greg Schiano stresses the need for Rutgers to improve each week in the challenging Big Ten. Nebraska is 4-1 and led by star freshman quarterback Dylan Raiola, who has thrown for 1,224 yards, 9 touchdowns, and a 70.4 completion rate. That is very impressive for a freshman, by the way. Rutgers relies on its powerful run game, averaging 237.8 rushing yards and 35 points per game, with Kyle Manungai and leading the way at 589 yards this season with 6 touchdowns. Nebraska's defense is very strong, though, allowing just 85.4 rushing yards and 12.2 points per game, and recently held Purdue to 50 rushing yards, which, you know, that's not exactly the greatest accomplishment in the world, but still, that's 50 rushing yards. Schiano praises Rayola's athleticism and leadership, noting he is impressive command of Nebraska's offense as a freshman. Nebraska holds a 6-0 all-time record against Rutgers and is unbeaten in 2 home meetings. Zach, what stands out to you in this game?
I think we said last week that Washington-Rutgers would be a good old-fashioned rock fight. This will be another one.
Got another rock fight.
But I think what's interesting is that Nebraska, the past couple weeks, I feel like has tried to go away from that identity and trying to put more on Raiola and the receiving core. And I think that's the temptation to do when you have a star quarterback. And I'm not sure why they've done it, because I think they need to establish their run game. They need to establish their physicality. And against Purdue, who is a bad run defense. I mean, just abysmal. It just kind of felt like they kind of hung around and just, they finally went to it in the second half. But I just felt like, I feel like Nebraska is trying to play in a way that isn't Nebraska football at times. Is that wrong? Or is that
In the past few years in Nebraska football, I think you wouldn't play anything but that, but kind of see what you're saying there. I do think that one of the biggest issues that plagued them, like I actually thought Nebraska's defensive line played a good game against Illinois. One of the biggest issues that plagued them, though, were those penalties. They were just inopportune penalties that gave Illinois life toward the end of the game. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Illinois. Illinois, you know, the penalties happened and they capitalized on them. So I think you have to give Illinois credit for that. But in this situation, like, I still think Nebraska's defensive line is very good, and I still think John Bullock is one of the best linebackers in this conference. Now, he's not getting talked about in that way, but John Bullock, to me, is a very good linebacker and offers a lot to this Nebraska defense that kind of goes unnoticed at times. But I do think, like, Nebraska has a legit run defense here. Do I think they're going to hold Rutgers to less than 100 yards rushing? No, they're not going to do that. I don't think anybody's going to hold Rutgers to less than 100 yards rushing this year, even if they played Ohio State. I think Ohio State or Michigan, like, I don't think any of these teams would hold them less to 100 yards rushing. But I think what you have to do is you have to take advantage when Athan Kaliak-Manis is throwing the ball, which, granted, Athan Kaliak-Manis has been much better this year than he was at Minnesota. But if you can get him to revert back to what he was at Minnesota, if you can get pressure on him and get him to be uncomfortable back there in the pocket and, you know, play press coverage on some of these guys that Rutgers has, I think you can impact this Rutgers offense enough to, really set up your offense well in Dylan Raiola. And then the other piece of this is, Zach, I think Dylan Raiola is getting a lot of credit, but these receivers that Nebraska has, they are darn good, man. Isaiah Nayor and Jamal Banks, like, these are big-bodied wide receivers, and I love what Matt Rhule was doing here, where he said, look, we're going to have a young quarterback. Let's just get some big-body wide receivers he can just throw the ball up to at times. Now, the Illinois player made an incredible play on that one ball that was thrown into the end zone. I think his name was Cox. He made an incredible play on that ball. You're not going to see that very often. These big-body wide receivers are going to go up and get that ball more often than not, and this is a Rutgers secondary that's going to have to be prepared to stop those plays if they want to hold Nebraska to less scoring.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe the key of this game. I think Nayor and Banks have been better than I expected for Nebraska. And I think to your point, it's made things easier for a young quarterback to get adjusted, to get settled in. That might be the matchup of the game for me, is how do the corners, which I think are really good for Rutgers.
Oh yeah, Rutgers is a good secondary.
Yeah, Longer Beam, I think in particular, is a stud. Flip Dixon at safety. Like these boys fly around. I think that could be the matchup of the game that determines the game.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. Rutgers, their pass defense is allowing 179.5 yards per game this season, which is good for 36th in the nation. So it's not like the pass defense has been spectacular or anything like that. Of course, they did face Washington, who I think did get a chunk number of yards. But as we talked about in the last episode, Rutgers doesn't really care if you're getting a whole lot of yards, because Rutgers just wants to get out early and they want to hold you to field goals, and they want to play a brand of ball where they just essentially hold you and you can't score enough to beat them, which I think is a risky form of ball to play, but it's worked out for them so far this season. I mean, Zach, in your opinion, is this a team in Nebraska that you can do that to, where you can get out early and just kind of sit on it and run the ball and, you know, hold the other team to field goals and stuff like that? Or is this one where you feel like, no, Rutgers, like, you're going to have to really, like, if you get a lead, you're going to have to keep building on it? Yeah, albeit running the ball, but this is not one where you can sit on. What is your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell, quite honestly, because I think Washington is more explosive than Rutgers or than Nebraska, but they're also less disciplined, which I think part of Rutgers' game plan was let Washington beat themselves. But particularly when they got up two scores, I think they were attacking before that. But once they got up two scores, they were like, all right, we're not going to put ourselves in harm's way. I'm not sure that you can do that with Nebraska. Although I will say this, Nebraska has beat themselves as well, particularly against Illinois, right? You had missed throws by Rayola. You had missed kicks. The problem is I don't think Nebraska misses nearly as much as what Washington has. I mean, easily has not. So I think Rutgers is going to have to attack, and I think they're going to have to rely a bit more on Cali Ekmanis, probably a little similar to Virginia Tech, where, you know, Virginia Tech took away the run. You know, they kind of, I don't know if they played bear defense or what, but they aligned.
Which was strange because Virginia Tech didn't have a great run defense up until that time, right? Like,
yeah. Well, I think it was an alignment. Like, I think it was part of just their game plan was they sold out on the run. We're going to force Cali Ekmanis. I think Nebraska, they probably don't have to do that. But I think they're going to have to ask Cali Ekmanis to do more than just manage. I think he's going to have to hit some throws downfield to open up the run game. And I think they're going to have to attack more than they had to against Washington.
Steely Matt brings something up that I think is a really underrated piece, but I think in a game like this, it's going to be really important. Field goals, special teams will be a factor. In addition to that, punting is going to be a huge factor for Rutgers. Rutgers has not had the best punting so far this season, and I realize this is something that not everybody pays attention to, but I've read a few articles by the Rutgers writers and stuff that, you know, they are very concerned about the hang time and getting the ball punted off soon enough. Like, this could be a game where if Nebraska gets a punt return touchdown, or if Nebraska blocks a punt or something like that, that could be what changes this game entirely, especially when it's at home for Nebraska. So Rutgers is definitely going to have to figure out. Now, Torrey Taylor's not going to come walking in the building here from Iowa, right? You're not gonna find a Torrey Taylor just on the sidelines, but they're gonna have to figure out something with this punting game here, because you cannot have poor punting against a team like Nebraska. Because I think Nebraska, even though they've had their special team struggles and their field goal struggles last game, I think Matt Rhule is one of those coaches that he's going to take advantage if he realizes, hey, the punts are low, or it's taking a while for the punts to get off. and he's going to try to get back there and block one or take one to the house.
Yeah, that's I think that's a really a point well taken, that the punting game is going to matter in a game like this. And if Rutgers can't protect like that, that will be a big factor for sure.
Yeah. Now, low hang time punts can be a good thing. If you punt it, you know, short enough and at a low enough hang time, you can get one of those line drive punts. I think, who was it? Was it Wisconsin last week that had like a 74-yard punt? It landed at like 40 or 30 yards or something like that. But it was like a 74-yard punt. I forget who it was last week. I wish I could remember. But you have that every now and then, but I don't think you can rely on that to happen.
No,
especially when teams scout your punter enough and know, okay, I'm gonna line up short or something like that. So so believe it or not, listen, this is Big Ten football. Watch the punting in this game.
Yeah. Somewhere, be a big factor. Somewhere, somehow, Kirk Ferentz heard this and he perked up.
Yeah, he was like, oh, punting? Key to the game? I'm for it.
Oh my gosh. One other factor, I think, and I know we've talked about Raiola being a freshman. Shiano defensively, I think is pretty good at designing defense.
Yeah.
And I'm curious. So we have the matchup of the corners and the secondary versus, I think, underrated receivers for Nebraska. But I think the matchup between Raiola and Rutgers, like Shiano and their defensive coordinator, like what they have schemed up for him, I think will be another matchup to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Nebraska, and this is another thing that I've noticed from them, which is kind of unlike a Matt Rhule team, but it's been this way this season. I don't know what the deal is, but they're going to have some better perimeter blocking. That's something that Greg Schiano is going to take advantage of if Nebraska doesn't get that shored up. So if they can do that, that's going to be a big factor. But you're exactly right. It's stuff like that Greg Schiano will see and he will take advantage of and say, look, if they're not going to block us on the perimeter, if they're not going to do this, they're not going to do that, we're going to take advantage of it. So, but to Matt Rhule's credit, he's done a very good job with Dylan Raiola this season, keeping him poised, and like I said, those big wide receivers have been a huge help. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens here. Zach, I will let you go first with the score prediction. It's Nebraska on upset alert.
So have I picked an upset yet today?
Well, you said a few were on upset alert, but I don't think you've picked an upset yet.
I said I had one that I was picking. This is it. Rutgers is going to chop, baby.
Wow.
24-21, Scarlet Knights get the dub on the road, despite the fact that I picked the Cornhuskers preseason. I think Rutgers has actually been better than I expected from a running perspective. I think offensively they've been better than I expected. I think defensively they've shored up a bit. And I don't think I've been as impressed with Nebraska as I thought I'd be. So I think part of it, I think Rutgers has looked better. And I think the score against Virginia Tech is a bit misleading. Like they were going to blow them out if not for self-inflicted wounds. Whereas Nebraska honestly has looked ho-hum in several of their games. And I just think the combination of Rutgers running, I think their defense, and I just think they're going to be able to get a 2-score lead at some point, maybe up by 10. I think Nebraska might miss another kick. That's huge in this game. 24-21.
I have been burned too many times by believing in Nebraska in key games like this. So I am also going to pick Rutgers. I think Rutgers is going to win this game. I think Rutgers is going to be ranked next week. I think Rutgers and Indiana and Illinois are all going to be in the 20s or low or high teens next week. And it's going to be kind of a party for those teams right there. But I think that Rutgers is going to get this one done. Listen, I think Greg Schiano, like as much as I have given Matt Rhule credit, and I don't get me wrong, I think Matt Rhule is a very good coach. But I do think that he has a bit of these big game issues to him at times. And I think that Nebraska is still a learning and growing team. I think that people are very excited about him, me being one of them, but they are still a learning and growing team. And with freshman Dylan Raiola, I could see a mistake or two by Dylan Raiola that it happens late in the game. I'm not predicting that he's going to be like a big factor in mistakes or something, but I could see a mistake or two happening. And I could also just see, a huge play by this Nebraska defense that turns the field or turns, something in favorable in their direction, momentum, whatever it is that gets them the win. So I know I'm kind of going out here a little bit. Our friend Casual Big Ten Ken is already telling us that favored teams won 8-0 last week. So maybe picking all these upsets isn't the best decision by me, but I have been burned too many times picking Nebraska. And so for me, I just got to see it. I got to see Nebraska win one of these big games where, it's a really good coach on the sidelines, albeit Rutgers isn't ranked, so it's not going to be one of those ranked wins or anything like that. And I really believe in Rutgers this year, even though it's kind of down on my power rankings. I believe in them. Like I said, I think they can do it. I haven't seen it yet. I think I'm going to see it in this game.
Yep. Agreed. And I think to that point, the best running back in this game, the best two running backs in this game are Scarlet Knights. And I think that matters.
That's interesting. I think Nebraska has the better overall room. Like if you're thinking of every player equally, I think Nebraska has the better overall room. Grant, Johnson, they have a number of guys you can have tout the rock. But if you're talking about the two guys that are going to get the most carries, Manungai and Brown, I agree. This is a better duo of running backs. Interesting. Interesting to think about. All right, Zach, I think we put in a solid day's work here on the Big Ten Huddle, also simulcasting on the Voice of College Football as well. Oh, you agree with me? You think Rutgers is going to be ranked if they win?
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. If they're not, we should burn the polls anyway, but burn the polls. Second shirt. First shirt, the NCAA stinks. Second shirt, the AP poll stinks.
All right. And SEC bias is terrible. That'll be our third shirt.
Yeah. Put a picture of Bud Elliott on the front. Don't do that. Bud, we love you. We love you. I haven't met you, but we love you.
Callie's helping us out here. He says Brian Felter was the offensive lineman that went down. That name, yes, that is familiar now. Thank you, Callie, for putting that up there. Oh, whoops. I meant to get rid of that. All right. Oh, and UCLA stinks. Are you saying that's a shirt, Kent? Are you saying the NCAA stinks and UCLA stinks?
that would be some shirt right there.
That would be some shirt. That'd
Bruins some would shirt. Not be happy with that.
Yeah, there he is saying yes. Oh, I love it. All right, Zach, when's your next episode of Big Ten Football Talk?
Thursday, but there's probably some changes coming down the pike. So I'll keep you guys posted. But yeah. Yeah, Thursday we'll talk similarly about some of these games, but yeah, definitely check it out. Spotify, YouTube, you guys know the drill.
You won't have me interrupting Zach the entire time, so if you just want to hear Zach's eloquent voice all by itself without me interrupting it.
Eloquent.
Yeah, there you go. Programming note. So normally we have our basketball shows on Wednesday. I noted that we would no longer be doing the Thursday football show. We are actually going to be moving, at least for this week, possibly next week as well. I'm just kind of toying with it a little bit. We're going to move the basketball show to Thursday because of Big Ten media days and how those are working out. So we're going to try to cover all of the media days on Thursday night instead of just like half of it on Wednesday. So check us out over at 9:00. Even if you can't join us live, go back and watch it or listen on podcast form afterward. We'll have a basketball episode for you on Thursday. And that'll just be on the Big Ten Huddle. We're not going to simulcast the basketball episodes on the Voice of College Football. So if you want to hear basketball, go over and subscribe to the Big Ten Huddle. We appreciate it. Zach, anything else before we get out of here?
Should be a good weekend. Excited.
Yep. The NCAA stinks. SEC bias stinks. See you, everybody.